Good morning. Today is Friday, the 6th of August. Joining us this morning is Eureka City Manager, Mr. Slattery. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Brian. How are you, sir?
I am doing okay. Is this early masking, or is this I'm so low on the priority list that I don't get to see your pearly whites?
This is early masking for me.
Okay.
We made the change at City Hall as soon as possible. You know, we reverted back to all virtual meetings and everything like that as soon as we could. But after the weekend numbers came out, it was a little eye opening.
Yeah. It's we talked a little bit with Sheriff Billy yesterday about, you know, what numbers do you focus on and all that kind of stuff. It'll be interesting to see how this gets monitored and the reactions on how things continue to go and for how long. But we really now we don't need to wear masks at the city parks, do we?
No, you don't need to do that. We don't plan on having any mass gatherings at our city parks, so just general attendance is just fine.
Okay, so we won't be busted for not having masks. If we have four people or five people, we're okay.
Outdoors, yeah, you should be just fine.
Yeah.
And we don't have the police going around. It's just self-accountability.
Oh, fair enough. With some of the different things that are going on, certainly there's a lot of positive. I'm sure the paving is a big major smiley right now for you, along with some of the tourist numbers. I had occasion to drive 2nd Street earlier this week. Is there a shortage of weed whackers in the city of Eureka?
So there's been a shortage of parks employees in the city of Eureka for a very long time, ever since 2007. We've significantly depleted our parks department. It's gone from a staffing of 10 full-time employees with a supervisor, and we're currently, through the years and through attrition and through budget cuts, down to 5 full-time employees with a supervisor.
Uh-huh.
However, through strategic visioning, community pride was one of their main strategic goals, and council made a big reversal as far as the budget for parks. In fiscal year 2020-2021, the total parks budget was $770,000, and that includes all staff, equipment, everything associated with our parks, and that's to oversee a lot of areas of responsibility. And for this year's budget, they've allocated new positions in parks and more funding in parks, and we're up to $1.3 million. And so right now what we're doing is we're working with a landscape architect. They're putting together a plant palette for all of the landscaped areas and parking lots in the Old Town area.
And then a plant palette?
Well, making sure that we have a consistent theme is what I'm getting at, so that people recognize the landscaping to be unique to the Old Town area.
I got an idea for you.
That together.
How about rhododendrons?
I'm sure there'll be some roadies in there. It's going to be native.
Yeah, okay.
The roadies, I'm sure there will be. I haven't seen it yet. But then once we get that, we're going to clear out all the landscaped areas, replant them with that. And then one of the maintenance workers that was approved in this year's budget is going to be, we're bringing back the Old Town maintenance worker. So back in 2007, one of the first things that was cut was a specific maintenance worker for Old Town. And that maintenance worker will now be reallocated in this upcoming budget.
So,
we're interviewing for that position now, and then that we'll be hiring for it.
So that's the person that would be responsible for the weeds in the sidewalks and along the gutters and all that stuff that's happening
there? Little removal, increased maintenance at the public restroom, at the gazebo, all of those things.
Boy, is there any way that you could get a high school kid or college kid, give them a couple bucks and get it now? I mean, it's in the middle of the height of the tourist season. It looks like Dandelion City.
We've had problems. So we've worked with the rescue mission and looking at bathroom attendants, those type of things. It's just, it's not a consistent source. Right now, I mean, temp-wise, getting somebody out there to do that, what's also really hurt us a lot lately is the pandemic. When we were doing all of these budget cuts from 2007 and on, how we supplemented that was through SWAP crews and through CAL FIRE crews. And that's a major source of our lot of, you know, bigger string trimming type of maintenance responsibilities. So
sure,
whether it's,
yeah,
you know, the railroad car, all those things. Well, COVID has put the kibosh on that. We just got an email from the sheriff's office that SWAP crews are now not going to be available until September. And then throughout the pandemic, they've been significantly decreased, and CAL FIRE's been MIA. So
right, well, CAL FIRE's a little busy right now. I think the fire guys are,
yeah, but even prior, I'm talking leading up to this, you know.
Right. Hadn't thought about SWAP. I mean, that one, yeah, that makes sense. Or is there any flexibility with the courts just to assign, you know, what is it, community service hours? And they sign in, and then they, you know, do work and sign out on an individual by individual basis rather than a van full of folks pulling up. Is that possible?
And we do that. It's
okay.
Just the, you know, the amount of labor and the amount of man hours available through that are very limited. Even our SWAP crews, when they were up and running, I mean, we just got the email recently, but they were up and running for maybe a few months, I forget exactly how long, but when they were up and running, we were only getting 2 to 3 of them, as opposed to the eight that we typically get.
Is there any restriction for the retail owners and operators to go outside and, you know, squirt and pull out the weeds and just kind of keep their, you know, their storefront, if you will, clear?
Technically it is their responsibility. So it's just like a residential area, that responsibility extends to the middle of the street for landscaping purposes. We just have an easement for pedestrian and vehicle access. So 99% of the cases throughout the city, vegetation management and weeding and gutters and those type of things are the responsibility of the property owner.
Oh, okay. Well, that's probably where the issue is then between the owner and the renter.
We're not going to be going out and citing people.
Right.
But, you know, we recognize the importance of this, and I think the consistency, once we get it in place, we'll be good.
Good,
you know,
good stuff.
Like I said, our tourist numbers are going through the roof.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Miles Slattery. Miles, the lodging folks that we talk with in the region are all kind of doing cartwheels and handstands, thinking because the last, well, I guess since about October 1st, somewhere in that neighborhood, maybe September, things have been just going absolutely crazy in the lodging arena. What are you hearing from the retailers in Old Town and downtown? Are they also experiencing similar upticks in their trends this year?
Yeah, I would say for the most part, yes. Obviously, there's certain businesses that aren't, but for the most part, they definitely are. From the lodging perspective, you know, we've had a record year in TOT for fiscal year 2021, and it's done very well in the first month of this fiscal year. Yeah, they're doing well, obviously. You know, I'm hoping that restaurants continue to do. I know that at least some of the bars are doing well as well. But yeah, retail, you know, even during the pandemic, there were certain industries that did really, really well.
Right.
You know,
I think that's probably as well documented throughout the country as anything coming out of this. Now, I used to be really intimate with some of the lodging staff being on the Visitors Bureau. I don't, and when they would say record year, we would always have to probe and say, is that occupancy rate? Or have you guys jacked the rates up a little bit so that the revenues are higher, but the occupancy is kind of running similar to what it was historically? So now that you're the only one in that arena that I talk to on a regular basis, is that occupancy that's up, or is that just total revenues that are up?
So that would be a question. We don't get actual numbers, but I do know that, you know, it's probably a combination of both. People are charging a lot to stay here right now in certain areas, I can tell you that. But it's a combination. We just get the TOT, so we get the transition occupancy tax numbers. And so that is solely based on the bottom line of how much tax revenue we
bed
got
tax, yeah.
From all
okay.
of the hotels, yeah.
All right, and good job in trying to divert my attention so that you don't have your question for this morning. Yeah.
I thought we started with a question.
Uh-huh. Well, here comes your question. I'm even going to be nice because we're halfway into this and you almost won that. I've got a government-related and I've got an education-related question. Your call.
I don't want to embarrass myself. I'll go education.
All right. Why are those little red schoolhouses, why were they red?
I'm going to say they were converted from firehouses.
This is more basic than that, man. Because red paint was cheap. In New England, the 1880s, a homemade paint containing iron oxide was very popular because it acted as an excellent wood preservative. It was used on wooden barns, sheds, stores, and schoolhouses. It gave the structures a hard protective coat, and because of the iron oxide, it gave them the bright red color.
I was thinking that maybe it was something to do with lead, but so that's better.
Yeah, well, I'm sure iron oxide is illegal also, isn't it? all right, we will press on now. Budget overall is looking halfway okay. I know that at the county level, there was a lot of excitement and confusion at what was initially presented as surplus, but really wasn't surplus. A lot of it was refilling the coffers, so to speak, due to the extraordinary costs of the last 12 months. What does the state do or has done to the cities as far as your budget? Or now that you're kind of familiar with it and you're working with it?
I mean, we're better off than expected, obviously. I mean, we had surpluses, you know, because when COVID came, we made adjustments to our estimated actuals and what we thought were coming in from revenue. And then it turns out that once we got the numbers and everything back, that we were actually similar to what we had projected at the beginning of the year. So while it's not a real surplus, it's a surplus in the sense that we readjusted during COVID. So, it was, you know, we haven't got numbers from the more recent quarters, but from the COVID, you know, the peak of the COVID time, well, I shouldn't say that now because we're probably heading that way anyway. But either way, but during, you know, 2021, we did do well compared to what we had expected to.
And what about gas tax? You know, I know that at the county they get the transportation funds from a percentage of the gas tax that we all pay, and I guess now it's part of the reason why we're over $5 a gallon in California. Are with some of these higher efficiency vehicles, the gallons that are being purchased has got to be going down. What is that doing to your projections in that arena as far as gas tax dollars that can be used to continue some of the paving projects that are going on throughout Eureka?
So that's been going down for a while. You know, they did SB1, I think it was, to kind of change that, but it's been going down. We haven't been very reliant upon gas tax to supplement our streets operations. What's good is when Measure H passed, you know, we used to have a lot of that gas tax funding put into staffing, and now all of that gas tax funding can go directly towards the roads. Recently, you know, for this fiscal year, we allocated, I think, a little over $2 million, which is a significant increase compared to previous years, to go towards streets maintenance.
Right, and
we're seeing a lot of that.
And I'm going to cut you off. We got a break. See, you don't see the Nerf ball when you're not here, man. It's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:35. We are back talking shop this morning with Mr. Miles Slattery from the city of Eureka. Miles, I hated to interrupt you because I know right now, this year, your favorite topic is roads. In the past, it's been one that city managers have had battles with, trying to figure things out, and now it's like all of a sudden in the last year and a half, roads, whether it's 4th and 5th Street with Caltrans and some of the work that Randy Sundberg is doing, or whether it's the bulb outs and the stuff that the Olson family is doing, or just the payment from Mercer Fraser and everybody else that's out there. This is kind of like the heyday for the roads folks, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, we haven't had a good fund. You know, the majority of the road work that we've done in the past has all been relying upon skip funding from the state and different types of funding like that, because we didn't allocate very similar to parks. We've, you know, public safety was a big concern, and we didn't have the funding to go around to everybody. And so now we have a consistent source of funding with Measure H, and we're knocking out as much work as we possibly can. As a matter of fact, we just change ordered an existing contract in order to move up some of the projects in our capital improvement plan and have those done during this year, so that we can expedite the five-year plan to get to some of these roads that need help.
I know it's probably a reoccurring phone call that you get, and you probably dream about it at night, but all the work that PG&E is doing, are those roads going to be resurfaced so it's one surface, or are they going to continue to be the patchwork and the jaw rattling that we experience now?
So it depends on the road. What we did with PG&E this time is rather than have them, we passed an ordinance, and basically if a road's in a certain condition that hasn't been repaved for a certain period of time and it gets ripped up, and there's a certain square footage of area that gets ripped up on a road that's in poor condition, then they have to resurface the whole thing. So a lot of their work was done on H, and that was resurfaced pretty soon. And so some of the money that we were going to do that, they gave us a chunk of money, and that went to help pave 14th Street. And so we were able to do the entire length of 14th Street. But for some of those roads, H, I wouldn't say is one of the worst, but for some of those roads that are in more disrepair, those are part of our CIP and will be done over the next 5 years. Depending on what level of deferred maintenance they have, they'll be prioritized over the next 5 years.
So some of these we're going to have to suck it up and live with for a number of years?
Yeah, and those ones that we're going to have to, as you say, suck it up and live with are the ones that are in the better condition.
That's not a technical phrase, so you can't use that. So what? Okay, 14th is one of the big glory ones. Henderson, yeah, if that when that comes to fruition, will be another one. Okay, what's the next pavement or overlay that a lot of people are going to be able to appreciate? Not the neighborhood ones, but some of the main drags.
There's a lot of lengths of F Street that are going to be done. I think Boone's on the list. Del Norte is on the list. You know, 2nd and X Street area is going to be moved up into early next year.
That's okay, now wait a minute. How long have you been here?
We've had this discussion before. It is not a Portuguese term. It's a Hispanic term, and I'm going with Del Norte.
No, Booner is the one I got excited about.
And I don't know the correct pronunciation, but I know it's not Booner, so I'll just go with Boone.
If you want to be phonetically correct, use like an A at the end, Buna. That's the German pronunciation. Well, at least you know where I was going, so you know, it's a well-worn path. about this?
And then the other one was West Elm, you know, West Hawthorne, that got redone, and that was
right.
The one that we received a lot of complaints about.
Yeah, that was a major one, you know, bone rattling. As you look at this next little bit, sidewalks now are getting a lot of attention. The bulb outs are there, the ADA stuff. Is the city, are you going to be putting in sidewalks in those areas that don't have sidewalks yet?
So when we do the roads, there's a requirement to do that. So yes, when we do roads and stuff like that, we'll upgrade those for the most part. I know there's a big section on 14th Street at the dip that goes into Cooper Gulch there.
Right,
and we're trying to get that accomplished through some grant funding that's fixing that drainage that crosses the road there, and then also create an official a trail connection from 14th Street into Cooper. And at that time, we have multiple grants out to try and make that gap. So for gaps like that, we'll look at projects that are ancillary to the actual sidewalk and try and include that, because for that one it's more of a drainage issue as well as a trail project that we're looking at.
Okay, well, let's gather speed. We got three or four different things we want to hit, and rather than getting in the middle and cutting you off this time, we're going to take the break now and then take it up to the end. KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:41.
Hey folks, flying local is buying local. And with three airlines serving five destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time, 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Miles Slattery from the City of Eureka. Miles, there's all kinds of different stuff. You know, if we could do a quick punch list, if you will, of different things. Zoo looks like it's continuing to be well received with some of the remodeling that's been going on in addition to the major project. Question though, is there a relief for those that are in certain economic strata to be able to attend? We were there with four of us, and it was like $40 or $50. We shared it with some friends who were much younger, with a couple of wee little ones, and they said it's just too expensive for them. So I was wondering, is there an economic threshold?
Well, there's two. We have EBT discount, which is a significant discount for those on EBT. And then we also have free passes available at our libraries. So those can be signed up for and given out, and then they can go and attend for free. So there's those two options for those.
Okay.
Where it's a little bit too expensive, and I know it's definitely at our local libraries in McKinneyville and stuff, but I believe it's throughout the county that we have passes at the library that can be checked out and then brought back, and then it can go around for those people that can't afford.
Okay. So there are some options that are available then. What's the situation with the homeless camps and the transients? You haven't heard a lot about that because there's been so much focus on the roads and on the zoo. Is that continuing to be a problem? Is it expanding? Is it contracting? Are some of the services being taken advantage of now that in the past might not have been? Just in a quick thumbnail, what's that status? Because this normally is the time of the year when we start to see an awful lot more.
Well, there's certain properties that are either owned by other government agencies or other business or other private entities that we are working with. Some of them are more responsive than others, and it's been difficult in order to get there. As far as us in general, I would say that we have through our Uplift program have housed many and provided jobs for many, and a lot of those that are out there now have either dual diagnosis with mental health issues and drug addiction issues. And what we're working on now is an alternative response with some grant funding and hiring a mental health clinician so that we can get some of these people that aren't, don't have the headspace to seek help, try and get them the help that they need so that they realize that they need the help. And so we'll be working on hiring somebody hopefully for the next couple of months and start working with our CSET division and Uplift group to have different responses to some of those people that are having those issues.
Or possibly response at all, I suspect. So the mental health seems to be universally recognized as the significant factor for a large percentage of the homeless, or I don't even know what they're called anymore, because homeless seems to be too broad of a stroke as far as a delineation. I thought that was the county's responsibility as the state agency rather than the cities or special districts needing to step up. Is something changed there, or are you looking to augment what's going on? Why is the city having to pay for that?
Well, it's a partnership. There's a lot of, I guess you could say, red tape. The county for dual diagnosed folks typically can't take them. They end up in our hospital. And so that's a problem for everybody involved. And so what we did is we worked with the county and DHHS, applied for a grant that allows for us to get a mental health commission so that we're not having these people end up in the hospital and taking up beds in our emergency room. And so we want to find an alternative way to deal with that. And it's more of a partnership with the county in order to make that happen. I think that this is not going to be one agency that's going to help this. I mean, we have private mental health places here as well that, are having the same problems that the county is having. We're also looking at some outpatient services. I know recently I just spoke with a doctor who's looking at doing outpatient services for dual diagnosed adolescents, children under 18 that can go, and they may not have the same kind of restrictions as the county so that we can provide services to these folks.
So there's the housing component of that also. If these folks are starting to get things together, where are we with housing permits, housing starts? Are you seeing any movement from the development community on that, or is that going to be more out in the county areas in anticipation of not only what you were just addressing, but also Humboldt State and the expansion of their offerings?
Yep. So we've been speaking with Humboldt State a lot over the years. There was a project that we were planning on pre-COVID, and now it's kind of converted into potential workforce housing, and we're hoping to have some news on that soon. As far as the affordable housing projects we're on, we're working with some local companies to look at different alternatives for that and be able to actually provide more units. And then I know that HSU is actively speaking to a lot of the property owners in Eureka, looking for opportunities. And then, weekly we meet with representatives of the medical industry and economic development and stuff like that to strictly talk about housing. And I know that, Open Door, Providence, we're in multiple meetings with them about not only affordable housing, but also workforce housing opportunities throughout the city.
But, you're really getting this political thing down. Very, very, very broad, very opaque. Lots of people talking to various people.
I understand. One of the things that we have to do is, I know that this affordable housing causes a lot of problems, and I don't want to speak too soon. We have to get a lot of approvals before
Understood.
We can make adjustments to our housing elements. So once we do, I believe I'll be as detailed as possible.
It's not the verbiage that you're using, it's the fluidity in how you're presenting it. And we all know what flows in what direction. Thanks for coming by, buddy. Have a great weekend, okay?
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right. See everybody on Monday.